Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's begin with African boxing. The Bukom Boxing Arena in Ghana's capital, Accra, was the venue for the first world title fight of 2018 over the weekend. And local favorite Isaac Dogbe of Ghana delighted the partisan crowd by stopping Mexico's Cesar Juarez in the fifth round, as we hear now from our friend in Accra, Kwabena Quicksilver Ofori.
Ghana's undefeated Isaac Dogbe knocked out Cesar Juarez of Mexico to win the interim WBO World Super Bantamweight title. At the fully packed 4,000-seater Bukom Arena in Accra, boxing fans and various supporters groups cheered and danced in appreciation. Dogbe went straight into action in round one. When he threw heavy body punches, the Ghanaian increased his tempo and with a strong left sent his opponent to the canvas in round two. But Juarez managed to beat the referee's count. In round three and four, the Mexican started with some body shots, but those were not enough to intimidate the highly spirited Dogbe. The 23-year-old Ghanaian started the fifth round like a real warrior and punished Juarez with heavy body shots, which sent him to the floor and looked hurt. The American referee Tony Weeks, saving the situation, waved to end the fight.
You know, in all things, like I keep saying, my victories are not by my own strength. My victory came from the Lord Almighty. And I thank God for this, for another great victory. You know, I've proven a lot of people wrong. And I just want to give glory to the Almighty God for this great victory today. And I want to say a big thank you to the team around me, working so hard. My father and my assistant and his assistant coaches, you know, these guys have worked so hard. My one, Zakim, you know, of Kempinski, Group Koshigan, Ellis Koshigan, and John Marfo. These guys have worked so hard. Look, I am over the moon. And like I said, I just give glory to God for this victory. And I want to say a big thank you to the nation of Ghana. And I hope that I've proven everyone wrong, or I should say I've proven everyone right, that, you know what, Isaac Dogbe is a real deal.
For the sunny side of sports, Kwabena Ofori in Bukom Arena, Accra.
Thanks, Kwabena. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. In more African boxing news, former WBA lightweight champion Paulus Moses of Namibia will get another title shot next month here in the United States. The 39-year-old Moses will fight Mexico's Rey Beltran for the vacant WBO lightweight title on February 16th in Reno, Nevada. Moses has a professional record of 40 wins and 3 losses with 25 knockouts. He held the WBA lightweight title belt from 2009 to 2010. Meanwhile, the Mexican Beltran, who's 36 years old, has a professional record of 34 victories, 7 defeats, and 1 draw. This is Beltran's third shot at a world title. Fighting for the WBO lightweight title in 2013, the Mexican ended up in a disputed draw with Scottish fighter Ricky Burns in Glasgow. And the following year, Beltran lost a unanimous decision to American Terrence Bud Crawford. Elsewhere in boxing, next week marks what would have been the 76th birthday of boxing great Muhammad Ali, who died in 2016. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, VOA's Adam Phillips tells us about Ali's early years.
Muhammad Ali was born Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. in Louisville, Kentucky, on January 17, 1942, to a poor family. One day, when Cassius was 12, someone stole his beloved bicycle. A white policeman named Joe Martin heard Clay crying and vowing to beat up the thief. On the spot, Martin offered to mentor the boy at his boxing gym downstairs as a way to channel his anger. In 1960, just 6 years later, Cassius Clay would win Olympic gold in Rome.
The most popular USA winner was the lighthearted Cassius Marcellus Clay V in white here, who easily defeated Poland's Zbigniew Patrykowski. Cassius Clay, the winner for the USA.
Legend has it that back in Kentucky, Cassius Clay angrily threw his gold medal into the river because of the racism he encountered in Louisville. Still, he was quickly snapped up by a small group of Louisville investors who sensed his promise, says New York University history professor Jeffrey Sammons, who doesn't really believe that Ali actually threw his medal away, but the author of Rebel with a Cause and Beyond the Ring, The Role of Boxing in American Society, says that all the hype around Cassius Clay was certainly real enough.
He becomes a Madison Avenue creation, a breath of fresh air. Boxing had grown stale. There were all kinds of issues with organized crime. They saw in this young, brash Cassius Clay someone who would make boxing marketable in a way that it once had been. He modeled himself on, in some ways, Jack Johnson, because he talked to his opponent, but on the other hand, on Gorgeous George, who was this foppish wrestler who had all this shtick, you know, with perfume and blonde hair and effeminacy, et cetera, that he was the beautiful one. And, of course, young Clay referred to himself as beautiful, but also as the greatest.
This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. This I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world in 64.
This patter earned Cassius Clay the nickname the Louisville Lip.
Many people didn't think that he was for real, that he was more mouth than skill or talent. And, of course, many of these opponents were not very skillful boxers, or they were well past their prime.
As when, in November 1962, Clay fought Archie Moore in Los Angeles. The man fans dubbed Ageless Archie entered professional boxing 7 years before Clay was born. Clay accurately predicted before the fight, "Don't block the aisle and don't block the door. You will all go home after round four."
Ripping punches by Clay, and Moore goes down. Cassius raises his hands over his head, and it's all over. Clay wins by a fourth round knockout, as predicted.
Soon bigger bouts were in the offing. Ali had won all 19 of his professional fights when he challenged Sonny Liston for the heavyweight championship of the world. Hulking and powerful, with a criminal record and alleged ties to the mafia, Liston accepted Clay's challenge. The fight was set for February 25, 1964, in Miami Beach, Florida. During the run-up to the bout, Clay continually taunted Liston to reporters, calling him a big, ugly bear who even smells like a bear.
"I'm handsome, I'm fast, I'm pretty, and can't possibly be beat. If you like to lose your money, be a fool and bet on Sonny."
When Ali showed up for the weigh-in the night of the match, the betting odds were 8-1 against him. Astoundingly, Clay vanquished Liston in the seventh round in a technical knockout.
"Clay has won! Clay has won!"
Then the new heavyweight champion of the world does something else, perhaps even more dramatic. Immediately after the fight, he announces that he had converted to the Nation of Islam, that he was changing his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. "Cassius Clay is a slave name," he said. "I am Muhammad Ali, a free name. It means beloved of God, and I insist people use it when they speak to me." Jeffrey Sammons says this frightened and angered many people.
Many people saw the Nation of Islam, or even Islam itself as sort of a non-Western religion. So that made Ali an outcast. Someone said that they'd rather have someone who's identified with organized crime than to have someone identified with Islam, or in this instance, the Nation of Islam, which was known at that time by many as Black Muslims.
Although Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad and his follower, the Black Power activist Malcolm X, both rejected the term, the Nation of Islam did portray whites as devils and blacks as racially and spiritually superior.
One of the things about the Nation of Islam is that it rejected integration. It believed in separation of the races, which ironically made it very popular with the Ku Klux Klan. Malcolm X actually met with Klan. It also resonated with someone like Richard Russell, who was a staunch segregationist senator from Georgia. And Russell was very supportive of Ali. So it just shows you there can be strange bedfellows in politics and boxing.
In December 1965, Madison Square Garden photographer George Kolinsky was still an amateur. He was in Miami when he spotted Ali crossing the street to the storied Fifth Street Gym, where the champ was training to fight Ernie Terrell the following March. Knowing that Ali was now one of the most famous and controversial celebrities in the world, Kolinsky decided to follow Ali inside, even if it meant using a bit of bluff with Angelo Dundee, Ali's trainer, at the door.
And I said, I'm the photographer of Madison Square Garden. At that point, I was only the photographer of my family. Angelo Dundee looked at me and he said, okay, comedian, come on in. So I went into the gym and I see Muhammad Ali working out.
What was it like to see that?
Pretty excited that I would be able to take pictures of somebody famous in an area that was pretty private. We had instant chemistry. We had, at least I had, the trust almost immediately in Muhammad Ali looking into my camera, and he somehow was trying to be good to me so that I would get good pictures.
The 8 pictures Kolinsky took that day did land him a photographer's job at Madison Square Garden. More important to Kolinsky, however, was that the initial unspoken trust he shared with Ali developed into a friendship that lasted a lifetime.
And that friendship was very, very important to me because, number one, I was able to get really great shots of probably the world's most famous-looking face. And secondly, Muhammad Ali, for all the brutality that boxing represents, also represented to me a beauty where he tried to be friendly and kind.
A current exhibit of George Kolinsky's photographs of Muhammad Ali at the New York Historical Society shows many of the softer sides of Ali behind the scenes. There are pictures that show him eating, washing up, or just clowning around. One memorable shot shows Ali napping in his hotel room between workouts. The muscle tone and gleam of his torso make him look every bit the champ. Yet one can also sense the all-too-vulnerable human being within. Of course, most of the most famous Ali photographs were shot in public, either in the ring, training, sparring with the press, or showing off to the public. Muhammad Ali was a fascinating subject, says Kolinsky, because everything he did radiated charisma.
Whenever you walk down the street with Muhammad Ali, walk into a building, into a lobby, whenever you walked into an area where there were a lot of people, everybody sort of gawked at him as if, wow, that's Muhammad Ali. How many people in this world have that charisma that he had?
Ali often projected an image of barely contained masculine rage. This was publicity gold. But Kolinsky says Ali was actually the gentlest man he ever knew.
Not many people know, unless you were speaking to him in private, that he really spoke in private in a whisper.
In 1967, the United States was deeply ensnared in the Vietnam War. It was a brutal conflict which sharply divided the American public. Muhammad Ali was one of hundreds of thousands of young American men who were drafted. He refused to serve, citing the Quran's injunction not to fight in Christian wars. Further alienating himself from the white establishment, he told reporters he had no problem with the communist Viet Cong he'd be expected to kill.
My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger. They never lynched me. They never put no dogs on me. They never robbed me of my nationality. raped and killed my mother and father. How can I shoot them poor people? I'll just take me to jail.
According to Jeffrey Sammons, that's just what the government set out to do.
He's convicted of draft evasion, fined $10,000, and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Of course, there are appeals, but at the same time, the boxing authorities are also acting. They're removing his boxing license, stripping him of his heavyweight title, and his passport is revoked, so he cannot box anywhere. He can't box here, and he can't leave the country to box somewhere outside of the United States.
Ali then took to the college lecture circuit, where he got a sympathetic audience among students who also opposed the war, during what would otherwise have been the heart of his stellar boxing career.
So it's from 67 to 70 that he's not able to box and earn a living. He said, I understand it. I'm standing up for principle. You know, I can't sell myself out.
It took a lot of guts to do that, right?
Oh, absolutely. On one hand, where all of this hurt his boxing career, it made him into a legendary figure. It made him into a transcendent figure.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Just ahead, reporter Samson Omale will have a package of African football news for us. So please, keep on the sunny side.
Oh, keep on the sunny side. Always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten all the way. If you keep on the sunny side of life. Oh, keep on.
I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now from Abuja, Nigeria, with a package of African football news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with some reactions from the just-concluded 2017 Confederation of African Football Awards in Ghana, where Mohamed Salah was named the 2017 African Footballer of the Year. The Egyptian and Liverpool striker Mohamed Salah has been speaking about the chances of the Pharaohs of Egypt at the 2018 Russia World Cup.
I think we have good national team, and we did very well in Africa Cup and qualification for the World Cup. We did very well, and we qualified. We deserve that. Everyone saw that. I'm very sure. I'm very happy and very excited for the World Cup, and I'm very sure we're going to do something special in that World Cup.
First runner-up in the CAF Player of the Year award, Sadio Mane of Senegal, has denied any rift between himself and teammate Mohamed Salah. Sadio Mane said he's happy to be in the same team with Mohamed Salah and appreciates their playing time in Liverpool together.
We're in the same team and we're happy to be in the same team, and we are defending the same car, and we are happy to play together. We always enjoy to play alongside of. Yeah, for sure, I think Liverpool going to win the Ballon d'Or. And we are looking forward. So,
staying with the CAF Awards, the African Women's Player of the Year, Asisat Oshoala of Nigeria, says the award has vindicated her move to the Chinese Women's Super League from England's Arsenal ladies team.
2017 was great, yeah, because I had a crazy year with my club. Crazy year in terms of being interesting, in terms of the ups and downs, in terms of not giving up, in terms of pushing out until the end. I think 2017 was great with my club, Dalian Kwajan, and we hope to make it better in 2018.
We stay with women football, and let's tell you that Kenya is among countries that will benefit from the FIFA Women's Soccer Project that will see over 2,000 ladies acquire training. The project's program will be rolled out in the first quarter of this year. This is according to the Football Kenya Federation Vice President Doris Petra.
FIFA targets to reach, to get about 60 million girls playing football by the year 2026. So Kenya is one of the federations that has been picked for the pilot project. FIFA is going to send us a technical person who is going to sit down with our technical people to plan
ahead of the CAF-organized African Nations Championship scheduled to begin next week, host Morocco gave their preparations a huge boost after beating Cameroon 3-1 in a friendly on Saturday in Casablanca. Elsewhere, 10-man Rwanda and Namibia played to a 1-1 draw in a friendly match geared towards preparations for their 2018 CHAN at the Jamal Stadium in Morocco on Sunday, while Uganda came from behind to hold Guinea 1-1 in a friendly match played at the FUS Stade Malie El Hassan Stadium in Rabat. The match was Frenchman Sébastien Desabre's first in charge as the Cranes' new coach. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. As Samson Omale mentioned, the 2018 African Nations Championship, or CHAN, kicks off next week in Morocco. Our Voice of America listeners will not want to confuse the African Nations Championship with the Africa Cup of Nations tournament. The African Nations Championship, CHAN, is for African players competing in their domestic league. So, for example, a Moroccan player is eligible to play for Morocco's national team only if he's playing for Moroccan club. And a Mauritanian player is eligible to play for Mauritania's national team at CHAN 2018 only if he's playing for a Mauritanian club. And speaking of Morocco and Mauritania, they'll play the tournament's opening match on Saturday, January 13th in Casablanca. The following day, January 14th, also in Casablanca, Guinea will go against Sudan, while there will also be two matches that day in Marrakesh, Morocco. Ivory Coast will play Namibia, and Zambia is matched against Uganda. The tournament will continue through February 4th when the final is played in Casablanca. And a new champion will be crowned at CHAN 2018 in Morocco. The Democratic Republic of Congo, the defending champion, failed to qualify after losing to Congo Brazzaville on away goals. More football news. Argentina and Barcelona star Lionel Messi has achieved another milestone. Messi marked his 400th appearance in Spain's La Liga, and he marked his appearance in style. Messi and Luis Suarez scored first-half goals in a 3-0 win over visiting Levante. With that victory, Barcelona restored its 9-point lead in Spain's top league while it waits the arrival of Philippe Coutinho from Liverpool, who's expected to inject even more creativity into Barcelona's already pretty awesome attack. By the way, Lionel Messi now has extended his record in Spain's La Liga to 365 goals. Suarez doubled the advantage before halftime, and Messi set up Paulinho to round off the win in stoppage time. Barcelona now has a 27-match unbeaten streak. Also next week, the Australian Open Tennis Tournament begins in Melbourne. Local favorite Nick Kyrgios, well, he warmed up for that tournament in style. Kyrgios won an ATP title on home soil for the first time in his career with a commanding 6-4, 6-2 win over Ryan Harrison at the Brisbane International on Sunday night. This was the fourth title of his career for the enigmatic, I love that word, enigmatic Nick Kyrgios. In other words, he kind of has a tempestuous style on the tennis court, but maybe Kyrgios is starting to settle down, and maybe we should watch for him at the Australian Open. By the way, on the ladies' side, two-time Aussie champion Victoria Azarenka withdrew from the Australian Open. Azarenka won the Australian Open in 2012 and 2013. She's been involved in a custody dispute involving her son, Leo. And that wraps up the January 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Justin Thwaites. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sunny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
U.S. Ambassador to Rwanda Erica Barks Ruggles visited the Kinazi sector in Huye this month to promote U.S. government-funded activities to combat malnutrition. During her visit in December, the ambassador observed growth monitoring promotion activities conducted at the village level, along with positive deviance hearth activities, which focus on identifying good behaviors practiced by mothers and caretakers of well-nourished children. The visit also allowed Ambassador Barks Ruggles to participate in a farmer field school demonstration of kitchen gardens. The ambassador distributed garden and kitchen tools to community members and helped serve a nutritious lunch to participating children. The U.S. Embassy in Kigali awarded a $250,000 grant to Francis Xavier Bagnud, Rwanda, in September to improve nutritional behaviors, as well as water sanitation and hygiene, and to combat malnutrition in all 14 sectors of Huye. The project is expected to assist 53,000 children under the age of 5 and 10,000 pregnant and lactating women. It will also promote male engagement in the nutrition of their children. The project started in Gishamvu sector in October and will be completed in 2019. This program is part of the U.S. government-wide approach to accelerate progress in nutrition. Through USAID-funded programs such as Community Health and Improved Nutrition and Feed the Future, the U.S. government is helping strengthen and expand community-based nutrition programs to prevent undernutrition in young children and in pregnant and lactating women, as well as to promote agricultural productivity across Rwanda. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Rwanda, to help meet the critical nutritional needs of the Rwandan people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.